The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Well, she's got a lot of things on her mind to talk about. She's taking care of her voice, so you know that she's not gonna shout now.
She's not gonna shout.
So get your headphones ready to hear what it's all about.
No Fun, the Jen Kirkman Podcast, episode 371, coming to you on Wednesday, January 20th, or whenever you're listening to this. I'm just telling you when it came out, okay? Welcome to new listeners. I know there is a ton of you because I have been tweeting the shit about this podcast lately. That sentence didn't make sense. And a lot of you ask, is this jokes? Are there jokes? Jokes? When am I sitting around telling jokes? Am I Jackie Mason? Is that, I mean, can you gather from my tweets and my Instagram stories and my stand-up what this might be? I am Jen Kirkman. I am a comedian. I have two comedy specials on Netflix that you can watch any old time. I'm Gonna Die Alone and I Feel Fine and Just Keep Living. And also you can buy them as albums. You can just go to the link in all my bios, Twitter, Instagram. Buy those albums if you want to just listen to the audio version. I'm also an author. You can find my two books anywhere you buy books. But you know you're going to get it on Amazon, probably. I can barely take care of myself about being a woman who doesn't want kids. And I know what I'm doing in other lives I tell myself about turning 40, traveling the world, dating, all kinds of sexy, juicy stories for you. Now, but this podcast is not a book and it's not a comedy special. It is where I can go to show another side of myself and be myself. And you can hopefully enjoy being part of my weekly monologue. Nothing is scripted. It is not joke per minute. It's sometimes funny, sometimes serious, but always honest and real. This is where a comedian goes to be her real self. Now, this is the part of the podcast where I'd normally play a little music and tell you where I'm touring, but there is no tour in 2021. That is right. Even if I'm vaccinated and COVID is not coming for me, there is no tour in 2021. So the best way to see this face is to join my Patreon right now. As you listen and you are 2 minutes into this episode, my Patreon subscribers have already been watching 20 minutes of me talking before I hit record on the free version. That's right. The video version of this podcast exists. It's exclusively on patreon.com, and that is just for $5 a month. With the video version, again, you get some extra stuff for each episode, and you get one 20-minute bonus episode a month where I talk about a celebrity story in pop culture, as well as unreleased stand-up and other little things I throw at you. And of course, if you join at the $10 or the $15 or the $20 level, that gets you more of those 20-minute bonuses, plus a one-hour bonus every month if you join at the $10 level. So there you go, everybody. Lots of things to choose from. That is in lieu of the portion of my income that used to come from touring. It now comes from Patreon. So if that all thrills you, join up, patreon.com/JenKirkman. And I would love to have you there. You can join up. You can cancel anytime. You can come back anytime. I'm really not keeping track of your names in that way. Although I do write down current subscribers and I give them a shout out. So this week, and I had to do it in alphabetical order. I'm sorry. Otherwise, I get confused. So if you're like, why does everyone that listens to her podcast have a name that begins with W? This week, I'd like to shout out some of my Patreon subscribers. Thank you, Wendy, Wildress Canelo, Wendy Martin, Wendy Elliott, Wayne Musso, Vivian Levy, Virginia Vaughn, Virginia Little, Victoria James, Victoria Chavez, Vanispheres, she's just a one-name person with a cool name, Valerie Popejoy, and Teresa Edmonds. Thank you all for being Patreon subscribers. If I butchered your names, I am sorry. And one last piece of business before I get into the episode. This podcast is part of the Misfit Toys Collective. It is a collective of podcasts that you can find under the umbrella of Misfit Toys, started by Jimmy Pardo and Matt Belknap of the Never Not Funny podcast. You can listen to Doug Loves Movies. I'm on a few episodes of that even recently in the last month. Never Not Funny. I'm on that show all the time. Go look up the episodes that I'm in. Mike Schmidt's The 40-Year-Old Boy. Now, I'm not on that show, but it's very similar to this show in the sense that it is a monologue show. So if you want to hear what's a guy going to say for an hour, go over and check out Mike, my brother. The Todd Glass Show. I'm on many episodes of that. You can go root around and find the Jen episodes. Jonah Ray's Let Me Watch Your Movie With You. I'm not on that one because I haven't made a movie, but Jonah Ray watches movies that people made with them. So you know there's lots of celebs on there. So in the show notes, you will find the link to the Misfit Toys Comedy Collective, and you can check out all of these other great podcasts. Keep us all going. So what am I talking about this week? Well, I'm feeling a little melancholy. There was a coup. Our country is, I think, just straight up in the Civil War. I know it's hard to, well, we'll get into it. Civil War. I'm like going back as though there's going to be an edit and Civil War. And I'm going to talk about how I have completely changed. And I am now a woman who no longer prefers texting. Please, I am a phone call person again, as I always have been. I had an amazing customer service experience with Apple. And I know I only complain about customer service, so I wanted to give credit where credit is due. And I want to know the life story of this guy who helped me. Complaints, things that shouldn't be a big deal but drive me fucking crazy, are just completely missed jokes that I did on Twitter this week. An article about keeping Christmas decorations up later this year, and an article about working from bed. I might try to get both of those in here because I think they kind of relate in a way. And a few words on my sweet soul of a human being, ex-husband, who passed away last week. So let's begin the podcast. Oh, that's okay. Sorry. I don't know. Was I waiting for something to happen, like some kind of monster truck rally music to come in? Oh, and of course, we do have some listener emails about a few things here and there. I think we should start with the listener emails just because I feel like I'm going to be on my own roll, and I want to get you guys taken care of. So let's just start with some listener emails. These are, I filed these under newer emails, but kind of random. They're not relating to topics that we've recently talked about on the show. This one wrote, "Oh my God, Jen, just need to say that you saved me. I'm just here trying to enjoy a meal with a happy hour drink while finishing some last minute work. Mind you, I'm sitting at the bar because there are special. I'm hungry. My boyfriend is in the UK and none of my friends are answering. I'm calling them because the men around are feeling uncomfortable and are trying to start conversations with me. First, I'm getting, you know who you look like starters, but thank God I have your podcast in my ears, in my earbuds. I keep smiling and just digging back into my work, meal, drink. And I'm hearing, are you from here? As you're singing Christmas jingles into my ear. Ha 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 ha. Thank you. That's all I want to say. Your cheerful pod helped me freaking ignore it. Like, dude, you're a stranger. Please leave me alone. Ha ha ha. Love you. Jess, as in Jess. I'm French. Sorry. Part two, Jen. So I'm actually writing to get away from small talk while enjoying my meal at a bar. I mean, this is one of the times I wish I was a dude. Like, first I'm getting this is who you look like nonstop. Then I get, are you a surgeon the way you're cutting up that chicken? I had to say, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of something and point to my ears. Merry Christmas, Jen. Love your podcast. But please, less dead silence, please. LMAO. I always feel like my shit caught up and I'm rambling around. Ha ha ha. Listen, guys, there's dead silence is a staple of the podcast. I cannot take your request to not have it. P.S. He hasn't stopped talking. He said, since you're so essential and you're busy, would you like a drink? Like, he actually tapped me. Leave me alone. Oh, my God. That's a nightmare. And, you know, I don't understand why men don't acknowledge when women have headphones in. And it's the fun. Every man I know goes, oh, why don't you just put headphones in? I go, oh, that's adorable. Oh, that's adorable that you think men ignore us when we have headphones in. Now, I don't know why this girl's inside at a bar. What's going on? There's COVID. I'm not sure. We're not going to judge. Hey, Jen, I just want to let you know how much I love your impression of your mom. It's always a surprise, and I keep thinking more. I lay here on my couch in Somerville laughing my ass off. Thanks, Paul. Hey, I was, first of all, the first place I ever did comedy was in Somerville at the Green Street Grill. And I had a boyfriend that lived there. I spent so much time in fucking Somerville. And then I was in an improv troupe that was in Somerville. Well, it was more like, I forget the name of the square that it was in. But anyway, I spent at least like a good 3 years roaming around Somerville from like 96 to 90, maybe 2 years, 96 to 98, whatever, dude. Yes, my impression of my mom is great. I have been talking to her a lot this week. She's had many gems, but their conversations are too personal to let you in on. So you don't have any mom stories right this second. Jen. So last week I did that article about friendship, or it was two episodes ago, I'm sorry, where I talked about how Kamala Harris had tweeted, you know, check in on your single friends. And then I read an article about what if friendship was the way we constructed society instead of around relationships. And this person wrote, hi, Jen, your podcast about friendship, episode 369, and the articles and the book you mentioned were profound and incredibly relatable. I am 32 and I have chosen to be single for the majority of my adult life. I've had flings and fun, but I've simply never wanted to settle. My married friends don't understand why I have chosen this, and my single friends seem rather desperate to be married and settled. As a result of my choices, my life is a result of active choices I have made, so I do take complete ownership of my choices. I found myself in a rather bizarre intersection between the people and friendships in my life. I traveled and lived abroad for the majority of my 20s, and I thoroughly enjoy going to therapy, which has helped me to realize what friendships are important and lasting. Just today, I have communicated in one way or another with friends from the US, China, Amsterdam, and Canada. What I found is that just because someone is my friend, it doesn't mean they understand me or prioritize the friendship. So for me, it's basically best friends and then everyone else. My best friend tiered friends are wonderful. One of my best friends is a mid-40s partner at her law firm with three teenage sons, and I have lived further away from her when we were living in the same city. know what that means. Okay. Another best friend has a newborn and a toddler, yet I have always felt like I am the priority in her life. And another best friend has a different faith to mine, different first language, differing political beliefs, and lives on the other side of the world, yet we love and adore each other. None of my best friends would ever, quote, check in on me because I'm single, Kamala Harris style, as they know that I would tell them to shut the fuck, you idiots. Shut the fuck up, you idiots. You know I'm good. I think what the pandemic has done for friendships is what I have inadvertently done for the past 12 years of my life. Travel and therefore be forced apart from the comforts of face-to-face friendship and in turn realize who matters to me and who I matter to. It's a lovely feeling knowing that time and space are irrelevant to my friendships. I hope everyone can find the same. Liz, Australian, she says, lucky me. Oh, on a personal note, Jen, I am grateful and thankful for you and your podcast. I've been listening since your early days. The first time you were on Will Anderson's podcast, you were so seemingly nervous. It was so sweet. It really was, and I'd known Will forever. I think Will and I were, we had partaken in some things before the podcast. Oh my God, I have COVID. I don't. Through your podcast, it was jarring at the time to think of a solo podcast, but now I much prefer it. Through your podcast, you've traveled the world with me. I have specific memories of walking down the back lanes of Shanghai and laughing out loud to something you've said while the locals looked at me and my foreign face with curiosity. I listened to you while I waited for my first therapy appointment, which I went to as a direct result of you speaking about your love of therapy. I cried my eyes out and walked around Paris with you in my ears for hours once. I drove through the Canadian Rockies with my mother and we listened to you. She loved your mom impressions. I love your fuck the haters girl, who I call Shoshana in my mind. You've been one of the few consistencies in my vagabond life. And I am so appreciative that you have put yourself out there, real and raw and seemingly funny. Original, I seem funner here, and continue to do so. Thank you, Jen. I appreciate you more than I have found a way to say. Oh, by the way, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. And I am so, that's like exactly what I want this podcast to be. And you have said it and I get it. And I am a podcast listener myself. I get it. I get it. I know that feeling of taking these people with you. And I'm just, wow, that's so cool. Thank you. Hey, Jen, thanks in advance for your tips with dealing with the pandemic and everything else that the news has tossed our way. This person is talking about my free 52-page, very easy to follow, filled with fun and free tips and information that you can get that will help you until you are able to go to therapy. And that will help you as extra stuff, even if you're in therapy, my anxiety relief guide. You send me an email, I send this thing to you. It's a cut and paste situation. I delete your email. We never speak of it again. It's completely confidential. If you just go to anxietybitesweekly at gmail.com and just write anxiety help in the subject heading, I will send you this thing. You don't need to specify what kind of help you need. There is something for everyone in this. So please go reach out, get help. I love doing it and I want you to do it. Okay, great. So he says, Jen, I want to respond to your feelings about couples. I don't have any feelings about couples, but couples always think I have feelings about couples. I'm married and have kids and have been working from home for almost a year, and add in the home stuff and it's an ass load of work. And when we finally have a minute to invite our one friend over who is single, he's always busy. So we stopped asking. Kind of pissed me off that he was so busy. With what? Being a selfish douche? Of course not, but it's all about perspective. Anyway, I want you to know that I appreciate you. Believe it or not, I have made a habit out of using your podcast to put me to sleep. I am a cancer survivor, and so I have a compromised immune system. This whole thing has stressed me out, and I have a hard time sleeping. You have a great sense of humor. Clearly, it's what you do. It helps. Thanks. Chris. Thanks, Chris, and congrats on being a cancer survivor. We got many of those in the Kirkman family, and Yeah, I feel you on the couples thing. It can be very hard. You know, listen, let me just add, I know that you said you do have a good perspective on it, but let me add more perspective to your perspective, Stu. You know, us single people really do have busy lives and we have our own schedules and our own things and our own feelings. And if you have this one moment free, the thing is, it's not that we're busy all the time. It's just that we might be busy during that one moment you have free. And that always used to happen with my friends with kids is, you know, I'd be traveling while they'd be busy with the kid and I'd be home for one day and they'd ask me to hang out knowing I was home. And I was like, ah, well, I just got home and this isn't a hangout night for me, but I'm free. You know, it's like we were free and busy at different times. And they started to think I had this wildly busy life. And they would always say things like, you need to slow down. And I'm like, I do slow down. I do hang out with people, but you guys and I don't always match up. Now, sometimes, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of single people have become very, I don't mean this in a negative way, but they become very set in their ways. They've got their routine down. And, you know, it might mean a lot to your friend to lay down and watch a movie at a certain time of day. And sometimes, not that everyone aspires to be in a couple, but sometimes it can be overwhelming to be around couples and kids. It can just feel like a lot. And sometimes, like, we're just so used to being by ourselves over here that we're like, you know what, let's just keep this energy going. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he'd rather do something else, like have a one-on-one Zoom drink with you. Like, I had a friend with a kid, and once she had the kid, she only wanted to invite me over to hang out with her husband and the kid. And the kid didn't need me to be there. Like, they could have put the kid to bed and had me over at like 7. And she wanted me to be part of the kid's life. And there was never, so I'd come over early and we'd hang out for hours and hours. And then once the kid was in bed, I was as tired as the parents because I just had a full few hours, you know, being Auntie Jen. And then they'd want to relax for the night and they'd already run me ragged. And then, you know, I have to drive home. And I just, it was interesting because I said to them, you know, at 8:30, well, I'm going to go because I'd been there for 4.5 hours. You know, if I'd come over at 8, it would have been midnight. And they said, why, do you have a big party to go to? I said, no. And they said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm also in my 40s. I'm tired. Not because I'm in my 40s, but like, you know, I'm also an adult who has their routine. And I like to, I don't want to drive home when it's like too late because it's like an hour drive from where they live and they never come to my side of town. And I just said, I want to drive before the freeway gets full of drunk drivers. And I don't want to drive the back roads because it takes too long. And I want to be in bed by 10:30, which is when I go to bed. But, you know, I got tired out. So it's just like, you just never know. And if you knew the amount of things I did in a day, like as much as it's hard to have kids and raise kids, like single people also don't have a partner to go, hey, can you do this for me really quick? We do everything in our household by ourselves, plus our full-time jobs, plus whatever emotional support we need to be for friends, family. You know, we have the same life except with the kids, you know? So the notion that you would have all this more free time if you didn't have a kid is true-ish, but you would still have a ton of busy adult responsibilities and you would still need to mindfully schedule hangouts with someone that's on everybody's terms, you know? Anyway, keep that stress at bay, my friend. Keep that stress at bay. Keep that cancer away. That rhyme should do it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for tackling such an important topic in your first podcast of 2021. I don't even remember anymore what I said. I'm a newer fan and I just found your website and your podcast yesterday. Examining our friendships and relationships with others is central to our well-being. Although I don't think enough people look at this issue in an out-of-the-box way. I think it's normal to be infatuated with a new love interest or a special friendship and to temporarily put other relationships on the back burner while the new flame is growing. To your point, I don't think this is the same as the stratification our society experiences on a more regular basis between couples and singles. Couples do seem more comfortable when other couples are around and singles more comfortable with other singles. I think the issue goes deeper than this and is actually ultimately about how we define community. As a musician, urban planning geek, and a gay woman, I have long been studying and interested in the concept of community. When I came out of the closet in college, I was disowned by my overly right-wing family. Like many gay people, I dealt with abandonment issues and went through the process of redefining family as a chosen group of both coupled and single friends who truly supported all of me. I did find that when I was in relationships, there was less focus on my single friends. Although in my case, I was working full-time and was also performing regularly as a Minnesota musician, so my friend group more and more became the musicians I was working with regularly due to limited free time. Then I met a special non-romantic friend who was determined to create a network of independent musicians and artists who supported one another and helped promote one another through an internet radio platform that also did live performances and large benefits for artists fighting cancer. For the next 4 years, we and the entire group worked together to create the most vibrant community I have ever experienced. With the death of this unique spirit who had started the internet radio station, the community fell apart. Some thought I would pick up where he had left off, and while I wanted the community to continue, the entire economy was in recession, and I was doing my best just to survive. But the story doesn't end there. I ran off to California with the goal of finding and learning about other communities that supported each other in both personal and economic ways. I learned about intentional communities, cooperatives, and unique housing developments. I have now returned to Minnesota with the intention of bringing the group project back to life, with the specific goal of creating affordable live-work spaces for artists and a platform and stage owned by the artists where they can connect and influence community in a new way and over the long term. What I learned is that community can only grow when essential needs for food, shelter, clothing, medical, etc. are first met. Any project that was going to truly build community would have to address these core issues and allow people to feel safe in a special way without discrimination. The project is still in progress, and I am currently managing 169 Section 42 artist lofts that are not owned or controlled by artists and taking my first graduate level course on leadership in affordable housing. I'm certain that musicians, comics, and other performers and artists are the instigators of community. All we need to do is create the right platforms for them, and inclusive communities will grow around them. Thanks again for bravely tackling such an important topic. Best of luck on your journey with your chosen community, MJ. Well, that's a fascinating read. Best of luck to you. And I think that sounds incredible. And I think that's kind of what a lot of the future will look like. And, you know, I feel like I've really found my community of friends during this pandemic. And, yeah, it has nothing really to do with comedy. It's like come up because of, I don't really know. It might change again once everything goes back to, in quotes, normal, whatever that is. Right, everybody? Okay, so let's get to me talking about me. Enough of you listeners. So, oh, I want to give a shout out. This isn't a paid ad, but to a podcast listener and a frequent guest at shows in LA, Deb. She owns an amazing dessert company. And I don't know if it's always vegan. I just know she's made me vegan desserts and they're incredible. And it's called Desserts to Die For. And she had this licensed bakery truck, Desserts to Die For. It's a 1967 Cadillac Superior hearse. She caters events. She sells out of food trucks. She's not doing those things during the pandemic, obviously, but she makes her deliveries in the hearse, and she's located in Ventura, California, but she delivers to the San Francisco Valley and Los Angeles. Her website's being built right now, but people can check her out on Yelp and, of course, Instagram and Twitter. So please do check out Desserts to Die For. It's D-E-S-S-E-R-T-S, the number 2, D-I-E-F-O-R on Instagram and Twitter. Desserts to Die For on Instagram and Twitter. Check her out. Keep small businesses alive. And her kitchen is inspected by the Ventura County Environmental Health. So she's got a pop-up bakery every Monday. I mean, she's the real deal, folks. But she's great. And her desserts are incredible. So I just wanted to give her a shout. Anyway, so what were we going to talk about today? Does anyone remember what I said up front? Because I dropped that piece of paper. By the way, I am so glad that everybody now is into Fran Lebowitz. Have I been telling you guys about her, or have I been telling you guys about her the whole pandemic? Because what I love about, and if you didn't, you got to watch her show on Netflix called Pretend It's a City. It's Fran Lebowitz, and you'll get to know her by watching it. And Martin Scorsese, they both co-produced it. It's very similar to a documentary he'd made about her years ago called Public Speaking, which is really hard to find. I have a copy. And I've been obsessed with her my whole life, and I want to be her, and I want her life. And I just had my annual set goals with the manager call. And I said, you know, last December, I said to my manager, I would like a year off, but I want the whole world to have a year off. I want to do nothing and just let thoughts come to me. And she was like, well, that's not going to happen. And it did. So I didn't mean to wish for the pandemic, but as an artist, I needed some headspace. I was always like grinding, grinding, creating, creating. And, you know, I was talking to some of my girlfriends back home. We do this Zoom hangout every couple of weeks. Me and my old gals from childhood. And they were saying that, you know, my friend works in the IT world, but she's got 3 kids, a husband. She's busy, 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 obviously. 3 young kids, you know, everyone's under 10. And she had a really good job at this kind of, you know, like going to Paris on business. And she's like, she just wants to work. She just like, she got laid off and got a year's severance, but she's like, yeah, with the pandemic and just raising her family, she just wants her free time to be about exploring interests of hers. And she's like, she really just wants her job to be a paycheck. She's not really interested in, let me climb the ladder, then I'll be VP, then I'll be boo-boo, then I'll ha-ha-ki. She's just like, I'm on the let's wind it down train, but she's too overqualified for the jobs she wants. And she's like, I don't care. I'm not trying to get ahead here. Like, just pay me. Let me sit here. And I said, yeah, my ambition, it's this lovely thing. It's almost like a hormone is leaving your body, right? It's almost like I can imagine for some people, like a sex drive, having less of a sex drive would actually be a good thing for them. You know, it feels like, God, for me, having a little less ambition is a really healthy thing for me, you know? And I never had that, what I call sociopathic drive, to where I want to be remembered or I want to be push these people out of the way. I just get exhausted at the thought of having to spend so much time constantly thinking about, I don't even know, oh, who's coming up behind me in the comedy scene? And I have to have this joke. Ugh, I just did it because I loved it. And then I'm like, oh, I get it. There's so much other stuff involved. Oh, do I love it that much? I don't know. And so I'm just happy with my little writing job. And, you know, if more jobs come up, great. Let's get the paycheck going. Let's get that insurance. But the podcast I love doing, and if I tour again, I think it will be in more of a storytelling Fran Lebowitz way, you know, or doing live episodes of this podcast. And I had referenced Fran Lebowitz to my manager last year, and I think she just didn't want to hear that her client wanted to do nothing and walk around New York. And then we talked the other day, and she's like, I love the Fran Lebowitz special. I totally get it. And basically, showbiz totally understands older people now. I mean, she's 70, I'm 46, but in LA, it's the same thing. And so, whoops, I said, that's the kind of career I want. Like, I want to work on the anxiety stuff. Let's get me speaking about anxiety. Let's get me doing this and this and this. So I just think for me, jokes cannot contain me anymore. And the comedy club cannot contain me anymore. It's not the artist I want to be. And so I'm interested to see what comes to me. You know, I'm not sure. I'm still becoming who I'm supposed to be becoming this year. And I need space. I need time. I need headspace. You know, there was this moment when I got an email from my doctor's office and it said vaccine time coming soon. And again, they didn't mean me. It just meant everybody. Some people are starting to get it. You know, there's many more people besides me that go to my doctor. It wasn't a personal email. She does have patients over 65 that will be eligible for the vaccine very soon. She does have essential workers that will be eligible for the vaccine very soon. But even just looking at it gave me just a tiny moment of anxiety where I thought, well, this is all going to end. And I know I'm just talking about from my point of view. Obviously, I want it to end for everyone else who's having a hard time. But for those of us who were performers, we're constantly being seen, we're on the go, for us to be able to do our job from home has been incredible. And I've had a lot of time to just not be rushing around and realize what's important. And I'm afraid, I guess, that when I re-enter life, it will go right back to how it was. And I'm in some control of that. So I just have to make a conscious effort to not let it get that way. I guess I'm just not ready for that yet. But by the time the vaccine comes, I'll be ready because I'm not getting it for a few more months. But
anyway.
So our country is having some problems. And, you know, somebody said, oh, I can't wait to hear your take. I mean, what take am I going to have? It's awful. I'm not surprised. No one could have imagined. Everyone could have imagined, except white, straight, cis, male pundits. We all could have imagined, Jake Tapper. We all could have imagined. You know, those of us who are a little more internet savvy saw it coming. I saw it coming. I saw this kind of thing coming with Gamergate and 4chan and just being a woman on Twitter. I saw it coming. When I'm sorry, but with this Bernie stuff, it does. A populist is a populist. And someone who says it's this way and anyone who's not doing it this way is out to hurt you and take things from you. And I spent years being harassed online, being called a corporate centrist, rich, whatever, by guys I know who are millionaires. You know, two of the biggest online loudmouths for the left are millionaires. But they're not on the left. They're in a fringe. I'm on the left. You know? And so, look, it all comes down to white supremacy and mental health. You know, this is a white person problem. There were white women there. I'd love to just keep saying white men. It's not just men. There are women. But it's like, this is what I'm saying. That guy, that QAnon shaman, he lives in his mother's basement. Now, what have I been saying since I had a voice on the internet? Whenever men would harass women, we were always told one thing by guys. Fuck the haters. They're just trolls. These are guys in their mother's basement. And women are thinking, why don't you think these are real people? These are real people. And so what if they're in their mother's basement? This is how they're acting. They're showing us who they are. They hate women. What happens the day they leave the basement? That's how women think. We look ahead, right? And I would have to assume I'm not anything but white, but I know my black friends are the same way. Everyone is looking ahead, right? You're black, you leave the house, you get in a nice car, you're driving, you're knowing a cop's going to pull you over. Whose car is that? You know it. Even if it doesn't happen, you're thinking about it. Women walking outside, oh, I'm about to get harassed. We've been trained to think ahead, sense danger. So it's never nothing to us when we see a guy ranting and raving about women on the internet. I'm just glad he didn't have a machine gun. So that QAnon shaman who is now in prison or jail, and he was refusing to eat because he only eats organic food, then his mother got involved and said he really needs organic food because it makes him really sick. Now, I don't even believe half the food that says organic on it is organic. So what is he eating exactly? I'd love to know the details. But I've been saying it the whole time, like from even before Trump, there's something happening in the psyche of white men in this country. They feel something is being taken away. I heard this brilliant woman who talks about race say that, you know, these subtle, gentle shifts in communities where white people will not be the majority of the community, but it's not like they'll be the minority either. It'll just be this like big blend of races where it's like everyone is, you know, it's like 20% this, 20% that. And it's been misconstrued by white people to feel like their race is being annihilated in a bigger global way. And it's such a bigger problem. It's way more than I am going to get into on this podcast. But I wasn't surprised. And Donald Trump was calling for this. We have tweets to prove it. He told the Proud Boys on during his debate, stand back and stand by. And everyone said, oh, he just stumbled. No, he didn't. He knew what he was saying. And let me tell you something. Women told you about the Proud Boys years ago. Gavin McGinnis, who was the founder of Vice magazine and Vice the website, was always a bit of you could almost write him off as almost an Adam Carolla type. You know, what's wrong with men? Why are they wearing shorts? Why don't they wear, you know, men aren't men anymore. You know, they're putting highlights in their hair. Men aren't men anymore. They're talking about their feelings. He was one of those guys. And, you know, he was sort of this alternative world darling, and he'd go on people's podcasts, even cool people that I know. And he'd say stupid things like, you know, look, I'm just saying that if two women are raising a child, like who's going to teach the kid how to throw a ball? He just had these bizarre, homophobic, sexist things he said. But he was married. He had kids. He co-founded Vice. It was like, all right. Now, Gavin, before founding Vice magazine, I didn't know this about him. Somebody told me. Was trying to be a stand-up comedian. It didn't work out. So, I mean, right? That's his superhero arc. Talk about real life Joker. I didn't see the Joker. I know I'm not really getting that story right. But anyway, so then when my book came out about not wanting kids, Gavin started harassing me on Twitter. And then some other guy friends of mine started harassing me on Twitter about not wanting kids, such as Dave Anthony and Patton Oswalt. Then they thought it was so funny. Ha, ha, ha. And I said, guys, I don't know you, but I'm going through a divorce and I'm also on tour with this book and I'm really proud of it. And they would joke, well, what if you got pregnant on tour? Then you'd have to rewrite the book. And I just didn't think any of it was funny. I wasn't close enough with those two guys to think that kind of joking around was funny. But then Gavin was separate. But Gavin, years later, after the book was already out, and it was like, wow, what took you so long? Started harassing me on Twitter, and I blocked him and whatever. And I said, that guy's a fucking freak. Like, he was honestly upset, like taking it personally that I didn't want to have kids. And I said, this is a pathology of men are afraid they're being erased. Like, what is the worst thing that could happen to a man like that? Is a woman doesn't want to carry his legacy in her uterus. And I told everyone, this guy's not just some rogue alternative guy with a libertarian bent. He's fucking dangerous. And now he started the Proud Boys. So would you listen to women? Would you listen to Black people? Would you specifically listen to Black women? Anyone who's like, I can't believe what happened, then you haven't been paying attention and you don't have enough people in your circle of friends or in your circle of social media that can teach you about how to spot these very slow-moving movements that have been boiling up for the past decade. Now, as far as the actual insurgency that day, we obviously know that people in the military and the police were in on it because they opened the gates and let everyone in. I mean, we got it on tape. And the FBI's like, how are we going to find everybody? I can't find them. And we're like, oh, here you go, FBI. We'll just tweet you a photo of the guy taking a photo of himself while he's doing it. But here's the deal. I had a bunch of friends calling me that day. And some of my friends that were parents, and they were upset and just like phone ringing. And I said, I'm not happy this happened, but it had to happen. It was going to happen. And now they're going to take the inauguration a fuck of a lot more seriously, which they are. And I think this was just the beginning. And I know it's really scary, and I know it's the world we live in now. And, you know, America is in a civil war. And I know it doesn't look like the other one where we declare it a war and we all grab our muskets and we line up on the borders of Kentucky. I know that this is what it looks like. It's just like how in Russia, in the Russia-U.S. relationship, it used to be we're pointing nukes at each other, you know, mutually assured destruction. And then it became a war of misinformation and the internet, which is the thing that led to this civil war. So, you know, I would say arm yourself with studying about this kind of thing, learn about it, and don't fret. I mean, look it. It's scary. You know, it's probably scarier if you have a kid and you're sending them into public buildings a lot. You know, it's less scary for me. I just have me to worry about. And I'm older. In the sense that, like, look, you know. I mean, I do have my whole future ahead of me. But you know what I mean. I'm just like, I have a different level of anxiety about it. But I do think it's depressing and sad. And I have this feeling, though, that this is what needed to come up so that we can take actions and heal and get these QAnon psychos out of Congress. I mean, that's really what is scary, you know, is the whole, it all goes back to QAnon. So that's how I feel. I feel sad for my country. I feel angry that I think white people fetishize being a victim. I think white men do it more because women actually can be way more victimized in ways than men. I think there's a white person victim fetishization and I mean, I can honestly take it back to like hip hop. I really can. Like white people who love music about like the Black struggle, I really think eventually couldn't handle it and became like, what about my struggle? And it's like, you don't have one. Well, I want one because it seems sexy. I really think this, that there's a fetishization of trauma and victimhood that white people don't get, and they want it because they want everything, right? White supremacy is like, I want everything. They even want like to be victims. And I think it's scary. I think it's disgusting. The guy with the Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt. I mean, this is horrifying. So anything you say that you would have done had you been around when the Nazis were around, or what you would have done during the Civil War, like do it now. You know, stay alert, learn the subtle things. Obviously, you would have been outraged the day that the news media uncovered the concentration camps, but they were unknown. You know, when Hitler's brown shirts were running around, people dismissed them too. So now's the time to stop dismissing things, especially when people with a lot more experience analyzing this stuff are trying to tell you. You know, so that's what I think. I'm just... There's been tens of millions of people in our country that are radicalized, and they're not, you know, I'll give you an example. Remember the Live, Laugh, Love lady? She's a fake character based on a real person. You know, my friend's sister went a little bit, for lack of a better word, loony years ago on Facebook and just went off on me and said, I'm a Hollywood liberal and Chelsea Handler has influenced my politics, which was hilarious because I used to get made fun of in the writer's room all the time on Chelsea Lately for pitching political stories. And she'd be like, we should give you a political corner, Jen, because she wasn't political. I mean, she wasn't an idiot, but she just wasn't obsessed with politics the way she is now. Great. That's fine. She didn't have to be. She wasn't obsessed with pop culture either. But, you know, like, my point is that, like, the fact that like someone actually thought that means they don't have a clue what the fuck is going on in my life. And like Obama, I'm like, Obama, I was one of those annoying like Bernie bro liberals back in the day that was like, Obama's not doing enough. Like that she had me totally wrong, that I was just this like Hollywood whatever. And then there's this other person, it's a relative of mine who doesn't like the fact that I wrote a book about that I don't want kids, and she would, every time I would post about it, this is way back in the day when I used Facebook, about, you know, like my book just came out, she'd write something on her Facebook wall like, I'm a mother and I don't have time for foolishness, but people without kids, they have time to do this and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, she always talked about how she has no time, but she would write about 10 Facebook posts a day. And then you could see how many times she played Bejeweled Blitz. And then she was always talking about this problematic person at work. And it was everything else came back to like, I'm putting food on the table for my family. And it was just like this self-righteous, I'm a mother. And then my other friend's sister who was like, you're a Hollywood liberal. And I just merged these people together to make them into this one office woman who I called the Live, Laugh, Love lady. Because it's totally someone who has a Live, Laugh, Love sign on their door, and they're the angriest motherfucker in town, the meanest woman in town. Like, they say they don't have kids. They say they don't have time to do anything because they have kids, and yet their kids are, you know, doing whatever they're doing in the background while they're on Facebook writing rants. And you're like, where are your kids right now? So anyway, we call her the Live, Laugh, Love lady. She's a real passive aggressive person, and she used to she's a character in quotes that I used to do on this show, or just someone I used to mention. She's a type of person. So my friend's sister, like the ultimate Live, Laugh, Love lady who has not left her hometown in Massachusetts for 20 years. My friend said, do you know my sister is going to that, to the Capitol on the day that Pence is going to certify the votes? And I went, what? And she said, yeah, she's taking a bus by herself. This is a woman who is like travel anxiety, has never left the town, hasn't been to Washington, D.C. ever, thinks Boston and is some like big intimidating city. And if you're from Massachusetts, you know that it's a very quaint, small city. But taking a bus overnight, a bus during COVID, and just gross anyway, a bus from Boston to D.C. to, I don't think she wasn't part of the and by the way, it's not the storming of the Capitol. They walked right in. But the storming of the Capitol, she wasn't that. But she was there. And this is a mom. A mom with 5 kids and a husband and a house in the suburbs. Who's been angry for 10 years. And she's like, she said she would die for Trump. So, you know, these people walk amongst us. Among us. And I think the best thing we can do is not categorize by certain things we used to categorize by, and categorize it by a type of person with a certain type of complex. And also it does tie into white supremacy. But to me, this is like, whew, this is misinformation feeding people's anxiety.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Oh, it's so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking. Okay, well, enough with that. So, as I said, I am now a changed person. Oh, by the way, I was going to say in my merchandise store, there is this design that says, who calls people? it's for the phone phobic in all of us. And then I was going to tell about how I love talking on the phone now. But let me remind you, or let me introduce to you, in my merchandise store, finally, the No Fun logo is available. So you can get a mug with the logo of this show on it, a mask, a t-shirt. If you're not a t-shirt person, you can get a sticker, a pin, a magnet, a mug, whatever. But there's a new design for the Gen Xers among us called Respect Generation X. And it's a picture of a cassette tape with all of the tape unspooled and a pencil sticking through it. If you're Gen X, you know what that signifies. And I came up with that idea. I said, I want this. And then I sent it to the awesome design people at T Public, which is my merchandise store, and they actually drew and came up with the design, which is super cool looking. It's got kind of an 80s and 90s vibe to it. And that is now for sale. Now, don't forget, 2021, I am donating all of the proceeds that I get to keep to food banks across America. So I hope to donate to 2 food banks every month. So ideally, I'd love to make $500 to $1,000 a month, and I can give either $250 to each food bank or $500 each. So let's keep it going. We're doing good for January so far, but get the Respect Gen X. Now, I bought a bunch of these for my friends. I think this design, which is black, has a black background, looks really good on a coffee travel mug, a spiral notebook. You can write your angsty Gen X thoughts in it. It looks really good as obviously a pin, a sticker, a magnet. That always looks good. It looks really good as a phone case and as a computer. You know, those computer cases, like the soft ones that you zip and put your computer in, your laptop looks really good as one of those. I bought the hoodie as well and a tote bag, all black tote bag with that on one side. So go shopping. There's always sales going on. I don't know when they are exactly, but I bet if you went there right now, you'd be like, oh my God, there's a sale. So go to jenkirkman.com and click shop. But you can also just hit the link in the bio on my Twitter. At Jen Kirkman. You can hit the link in the bio on my Instagram at Jen Kirkman. And it's one of those links that sends you to, you click it once and there's like a million links to a million things. So I would love for you guys to shop and we can keep doing good for other people in this crazy world. Put design on. So talking on the phone. It's not much to say. It's just that, you know, I grew up talking on the phone. Talking on the landline, pulling the cord, you know, the kitchen phone that hung in the kitchen, then you take it, cord's all wrapped up and you pull it into the living room and you kind of like, the cord was like 30 feet long. And you just kind of like snuggle up on the couch and talk really quietly under a pillow to whoever you're talking to. Jennifer, you're stretching the cord. It's breaking out of the wall here.
Mom, I'm on the phone.
Well, go talk in the kitchen. That's where the phone is.
I don't want you to listen.
Why? What are you talking about that I can't hear?
I don't know.
I mean, truly, I don't know. So, you know, and then I grew up as a teenager and person in my 20s. We didn't have texting. You had a cell phone, but I mean, no one used it and the service never worked. I mean, that was the other thing. It was like, hello? It's just no point. So I was like a solid landline person until I was like 27. I mean, can you imagine? And, you know, used email here and there. But then as I got older, I couldn't believe how fast Gen X adapted to it to where now everyone my age won't talk on the phone. And when I went through my vocal problems years ago, I had to be silent for like 6 months. And they said like the number one thing that can fuck your voice is like talking on speakerphone and these big like conference meetings and talking on the phone all the time and blah, blah, blah. So I got used to not talking on the phone. I actually became phone phobic. I'm actually still voicemail phobic. I will not listen to your voicemail. If I saw you called, I'll just call you back. I'd rather people call me, and if I don't pick up, they should text me and say, I wanted to talk to you about this. And then I'll go, let's make a time to talk. I'm very into making phone dates. So during this pandemic, like I've just become someone who my phone rings, I pick it up. I mean, I can see who it is, but you know, in the past I would have just ignored it and then stressed all day and thought, well, I do want to talk to my friend, but I don't know what the anxiety was. Well, if I get on the phone with someone, then what's going to happen? They're going to want to move in with me and then I'll never be able to get off the phone. And then all my time will be, it was like this weird thing that I just couldn't believe I was in fear of. What would happen if I got on the phone with someone? Would I get too close to them? Would they never stop talking? Would I not be able to get off the phone? I mean, it's so stupid. Everyone has a natural rhythm. No one wants to be on the phone with you the whole day either. And now it's like phones ringing. Hey, you know, like I have my phone buddies that like I just talk to all the time. It's like I'm sitting there watching TV. Oh, there's Michael. Hey, what's up? He's like, I don't know. You know, just like people calling. I don't know. You know, my friend Morgan, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. Why? What are you calling for? I don't know. Nothing. Like, just like, wow, this is like the 80s again. It's so fun. But I have these other friends that will not talk on the phone. Like I have text only and I do voice memos with some people. They won't do voice memos. And I'm like, guys, you're going to lose the friendship here. I'm a phone person now. I'm talking on the phone. And you know what? It takes less time to talk on the phone than it does to text. If I want to tell my friend something really funny, I will call them and go, I got 10 minutes. You got to check this out. And I will empty the dishwasher. I'll have my ear pods in and I will empty the dishwasher and I will put the dishes away and I will fold laundry and it's 15, 20 minutes and we're done. And I've done a task. What can you do when you're texting? Your neck is bent. You're sitting there texting. You're waiting for someone to write back. There's no nuance. There's no ability to hear anybody's voice. And honestly, when I talk on the phone with people, I feel a serotonin hit. I get off the phone and I actually feel happy. When I get done with texting people, I actually feel like I've eaten too much candy. I feel not satiated emotionally. I just feel drained and just like, ugh, you know? And like so much time has gone by. And then you just have to rudely stop texting. I mean, you can sometimes say, listen, I got to stop texting. I'm going to do something right now. But I don't know. I think texting is for the, I mean, now I'm going way overboard. Like, but I think texting is fucking up our emotional intimacy. I am all about the phone in 2021 and here on out. So that's my pitch to you guys that I'm into phones. So let me say a couple words here. I don't want to say too much because my ex-husband passed away last Friday. I found out about it before it went public. I am fine. I am mentally well. I have an appetite. I am sleeping fine. He was not in my life for the past 10 years. He, as far as I can gather from what little communication we had, which was none, was that he just didn't want to be friends with me. I can add in all other things, which is, we both wanted the divorce. But I think it hit him hard in a way that didn't have to do with me specifically, but just change was a lot. And I think he was just, if I had to armchair analyze, I would just guess that he felt like, fuck, like, shit, this is a waste of time. You know, if this wasn't going to end up working out. And I think he didn't like that I talked about him in my act. And, you know, the way that I did in this one album was not very kind. And he's right. And I should have done this a long time ago, but that I took that album out of circulation in his honor. And, you know, one thing that I think was a bone of contention for him was that he didn't want his life public the way mine is. And I respect that. I don't think I did then. And I think it was honestly just an irreconcilable difference in it's not why we divorced, but in why we couldn't be friends, is that if I want to write a book as a woman about how I felt wanting to get a divorce and feeling crazy and feeling the societal pressure to stay married and people being weird about it, that has nothing to do with my ex-husband. To me, that's about me. But he's like, there's no way to separate me from that. And so whatever, it was a kind of an ongoing disagreement we have, but we had not spoken in 10 years. I ran into him once at a drunk history party, and we did share a really nice moment for about 10 minutes. And I had a belonging of his that I'd been wanting to get to him for a while, and like a family heirloom kind of thing. And he's like, oh my God, I didn't know where that was. And I emailed him the next day to get his address, and he just sent back the address, nothing more. I messengered it to him. I checked up on him to see if he got it. He didn't get back to me. So, and that was it. You know, that was 5 years ago. I do know how he passed. As his best friend Jonah wrote on Jonah's own Instagram, that he went to sleep on a nap and just never woke up. So that is true. I know more things, but it's not anyone's business, because that's for other people. But I'm not in the inner circle of the mourning, I guess. And it's been I'm okay. I have a million friends. I, again, literally was on the phone for like about 16 hours last weekend. And every day my phone's ringing and I have like a form text that I send to everyone that's like, I tell them like just what I said. I have an appetite. I'm sleeping. I'm fine. I'm appropriately sad. I have cried. I have this. We were not in each other's life. This is a little surreal. I am happy to talk, but I also am working full time right now and I am have to protect my energy as well. I can't just pick up the phone anytime someone wants to call to talk about that. I have to schedule things, you know? And I think that's a really important way to take care of myself. I schedule phone calls and then I leave some room to breathe after the phone calls. But what has been very difficult about grieving, and I'm sure other people can relate to this, is I'm only mentioning him because I just want to say in a public way that I don't know how to put it, that I loved him so much. And I wonder if any of his friends would ever hear this and just go, fuck you, you fucking phony. That's not true. But it is. I don't think we were a romantic match, but never once did I come into my home and go, ugh, this guy's here. He is a goofy, sweet, kind person. And our particular personal issues that we had each bringing to the table, each of our own psychiatric issues or whatever issues, anxiety issues, they just didn't blend. And, but again, I just think overall, we weren't a romantic match. And I think we were just very young and thought, this is what people do, right? They get married. And, this is going to sound so fucked up. But you know how on the podcast lately I've been talking about dating and sometimes I'm like, I'm a loser. I'm 46 and single. It's like, well, even if I'd stayed married, I'd today be 46 and single again. Isn't that, you know, it's just sort of like there is no security in marrying someone in this. Like I remember our vows were all these jokes about finding each other's body when we got older. Who's going to do it first? Like fun, you know, funny vows. But my whole stand-up special, I'm going to dial in when I feel fine, was about getting married does not secure anything for your future, you know? And like now we see, I mean, we've known that anyway, but it's really interesting to think that at one point I thought getting married would just sort of solve the problem of being mortal, solve the problem of being human. And nothing does, not drugs, not alcohol, not money, not career, not marriage. And so that's why I don't put a lot of stock into any of that stuff. In terms of nothing's going to save you from being human. So you better just lean into being human and have really deep and meaningful friendships where you can. And but when the news went public, I was so happy. I spent the day just reading every single thing people said about him and people that I don't even know who they are that knew him. And it made me so happy. And usually I'm a little weirded out by death, and it didn't weird me out to look at photos of him. And I just felt a feeling that was so powerful that I'm not sure if I felt it before, but it was a radiating love about how I felt about him, that it's not a romantic love. And I hope that anytime I ever hurt him or made him sad, that I'm forgiven and he's okay. And I might not be forgiven and that's okay. I forgive myself and I've forgiven him for any time he did that made me sad or anything like that. But I'm a little easier that way, I think. I respect his decision to not want me in his life anymore. I think that's a decision, you know? Even if it came easily, it's still a decision. And So I don't want to make this about me. I don't think that anyone commenting on his life even knew he was married to me. Like, I don't think many people even know. It does feel weird to have known someone for 10 years and be this person in their life that nobody else was, you know, nobody else was his wife ever. And to just feel like I don't have a part in this play. I know I'm making it sound like I'm not getting attention. That's not it. And that's why I tweeted one thing about him, but I turned off the replies because I didn't want people consoling me, because I don't need to be consoled. Right now, the people that really knew him best and most recently, or I would say most recently, need consoling. His family needs consoling. I am okay. I'm just weirded out, but I do not want, like, I got emails from strangers that were just, in my opinion, a little inappropriate because they just presupposed how I felt. And there was a lot of, don't forget, you loved, he loved. I'm like, everyone needs to stop doing that. You know, you got to let people grieve how they grieve. And every advice I got was not at all what I'm going through. And what I'm going through is, it always is related to our point of view, right? The way that we look at the world, whatever we're talking about in therapy, that's the lens through which we're going to experience the death of someone or something. Does that make sense? And so I'm not giving any details about anything because I'm trying to speak about something, but honor the person who so badly just wanted me to shut the fuck up about them in public. So I will just say, I hope there's a heaven. I hope he's reunited with family in there. I hope he's at all of the peace in the world. I hope our mutual friend Brody Stevens goes over and interrupts him and starts doing his usual Brody stuff. Great to see you. Welcome. And as I was joking to a friend, I hope that he's looking around going, is anyone else from our community going to come here soon? Or is it just going to be me and Brody for a while and like some family members? I hope whatever his soul wants out of this experience, he gets. I hope he felt so loved. I hope that everyone's energy is getting to him somehow. I hope that my energy is not, so I don't want to annoy him, but if he's open to it, then I hope it is. And I just want to give my respects to one of the funniest people who never got on stage to be funny, who just didn't want that kind of attention, to my former best friend years and years ago, of course, not recently, and to just, I don't know, someone who's very good, a really good soul in a sea full of fucking assholes. So rest in peace, Neil, or however you want to rest. I don't want to tell you what to do. And God bless everyone in his family that has to deal with this. And everyone, I hope everyone who is going through anything like this can learn what I've learned to do this week, which is just forgive myself and to make your life a blessing on their soul from the rest of your days. If it means you want to change things up a little bit, be kinder. This is the way we can honor people that things were complicated with. And I'm crying from the great joy that I have knowing that I'm truly okay and that my life is so different than when we were married. And when I was married, I thought I did this thing that's going to solve my life. And I felt so uncomfortable in the marriage. And it wasn't his fault. It just wasn't my time to be married. I hadn't solved any of my anxiety issues. I hadn't taken a look at my past trauma, at things I needed to look at. And the fact that I had to put on my do not disturb and come up with this group text for a million different people, and the fact that these people from so many walks of life, just the fact that I have so many good close friends that didn't even know him, but I sat on the phone with them for hours. And they just let me talk things out and loved me so unconditionally. I didn't have that big of a life 10, 15 years ago. And I have such a big, beautiful life now. Oh, and my family, of course, my sisters were great. My mom was really smart and cool. My life is ginormous. And I'm just sitting here in a living room during a pandemic. I'm not famous. I'm not doing half the things I set out to do in this business I'm in. I think I'm healthy. I don't know. I haven't been to the doctor in a while. There's a pandemic. But my life, the thing that my soul is so big. And I did that through a lot of hard work. And I think it's hard sometimes to let yourself change in the sense that when you change, it's hard to look back on memories of yourself when you were different. And it's hard to look back on people that knew you sometimes at your worst. And it's hard to not believe that was the real me and they knew it. Instead of going, that was part of my journey. They were there. I'm really sorry about that. I did change though. And I'll respect them by not needing to show up at their doorstep and go, look, I've changed. Aren't I great now? Just have to kind of know for yourself. And so that's just kind of what I've been going through that has really nothing to do with what people think losing someone is about, you know, and it's different for everyone. And I think the most annoying thing is people checking on me every day. How are you? Who are you? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't been off the phone in 14 hours. I don't know yet how I am. And when people would say, oh, well, you're just going to totally break down in like 2 weeks and sob. And I'm like, I'm crying here and there, but I don't think I'm going to be like wailing like, you know, a mother who just lost her son in Vietnam. Like and that's okay. Like there's not a right way to grieve. So without making it about me or trying to console me or give me advice, of course, that's an interesting topic. If anyone wants to email me, iseemfun@gmail.com and talk about, you know, times in their life that they felt weird about how they were grieving and wasn't sure if they were doing it right. I think that's an interesting topic. So feel free to email me. And even though you weren't a God person and you're not into ghosts and you're not into the afterlife and you're not into any of that shit, God bless you, Neil. And I hope everyone listening can just send him a little prayer. Even though he actually don't, he'll fucking hate that. Don't bother him. Send the prayer to me instead. Okay. I don't know what, send a prayer that I lose this 20 pounds I gained. Okay. Let's end the episode with something more upbeat. I am finally going to put my Christmas decorations in a storage space this year. Which sounds like I have a lot, it's a smaller storage space. It's like the size of a walk-in closet, but I just don't, I'm just so tired of jamming them in this like tiny closet that I have. But it is not available until mid-February. And so I will be keeping my decorations up until then. And I'm glad that I have an excuse. But I saw an article that said people are keeping their Christmas decorations up later this year, and I haven't read the article yet, but I can only guess that it has to do with the pandemic. So I'll read it to you and we'll end the show on a fun note. It's from the Guardian, a UK online paper. With 2020 finally over and the new year in full swing, many of us are starting to consider whether it's time we took the tree down. However, with many working from home, we'd like to, oh, it's not even an article. They're asking, are you taking your decorations down later? Let us know. Okay, well, let me know. iseemfun@gmail.com. Oh, well, I tried to end on a happy note, but that's where we landed. I was going to read an article about working from bed, but I'll do that next week. I'm a little bit, now my nose is running. So let me go deal with that. Okay, keep your decorations up. Tell me about it. iseemfun@gmail.com. Until next week, have fun.